The Adamite hero bashed.
Yeah, right. He got just when she thought it was safe to come back to Brooklyn. Bosh! it's a fun sound to make.
It is a fun sound.
For sure.
To make.
Great job, Brad. And
thanks, dude.
We chatted just for a second here between the core and this. Yeah. You have unlocked a way for us to do the medievals and even the prehistoric by getting at the scholarship. Because is it fair to say, well, I don't know, are there biographies of Bosch?
Not really. No. A lot of these interpretive texts will have a biographical section, which is basically what I said at the beginning. It's 5 pages, you know. There's a documentary where a guy went to Den Bosch as like to find Bosch, and literally he did it. They did a good job of what they could do, but he comes away with nothing. He's like, well, this is an alleyway that Bosch may have once walked by. And like,
they love doing that. Right.
Right.
I think this is a new type of episode that you've uncovered because there's no biography. Well, I mean, there's a very limited biography.
Right. Sparse. You know, he's a guy, basically.
Right. Yeah. We couldn't do like the way we did Kubrick or Sarah Kane or any of these others, Virginia Woolf. It just couldn't be done. You can't go A, B, C, D. So instead, you took this work and interpreted the work. So congratulations. I think you've invented a new type of Art of Darkness episode, a new type of profile.
Yeah.
I hope people like it, and I
enjoyed the research. I hope people like it. You know, like I kind of said at the beginning, this isn't necessarily the kind of subject that I think a lot of people have come to Art of Darkness for. And so I get that, but we got more coming. If you didn't dig that one, you know, there's going to be other stuff. So
it's nobody's, I mean, everybody wants Disney and Lovecraft and fine. And we're happy to do all of those.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're going to follow the muse where it takes us. We're going to follow, we take notes from people. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh yeah. I've noticed on Twitter, a lot of people have been excited actually about the Bosch episode, it seems, but also I've had a Bosch painting in my place for a decade. And I just felt like I have to know what this thing is. I've never been able to say to anybody, why do you have it? It's weird. I don't know. Like now I can talk for 2.5 hours about it if somebody asks me about it. So
yeah, beautiful. And it is something between a typical episode and even almost like the movie watch that we did where it's like, okay, we're going to walk around this painting. We're going to chat about the ideas that people have about this painting. Brad's going to give us his butt thesis, the dissertation on the rump, which is great. There's an awful lot of butts in this painting. Thank you, Brad.
There is.
Yeah, hey. And yeah, it was really fun. And now we still have another story for our beloved, our dear Patreon subscribers who we always love hearing from you. And thank you for supporting the show.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you, guys.
So talk to me about Bosch and the Nazis. What happened?
Yeah. So, that book, the Wilhelm Frenger, comes back pretty heavy in this. So the Wilhelm Frenger tome that I showed you, the first sort of version of it was published in 1943. This is an expanded version with additional chapters, but the first chapter about the Garden of Earthly Delights was first published in 1943. And Frenger tried to call it, this chapter on Bosch, tried to call it the Thousand Year Reich. And people are like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on. What you doing there, boss?
Yeah. Hey there.
Hold on.
Problems at home?
Yeah, exactly. So, it's got a name that's a little bit problematic. It's a little bit more problematic than that, I would even say. So, Wilhelm Frenger was very good friends with a man named Carl Schmitt. Kevin, does Carl Schmitt ring a bell for you?
The name does.
Yeah. Yes. So Carl Schmitt, Carl Schmitt has been called by some folks the legal mind. He's been called the lawyer of the Nazis, the legal mind behind the National Socialist
Party. Jesus, imagine that, Bill.
Right. Gazanga. Whoa, boy.
The thousand-year Bill.
Right.
I am on the clock, Adolf. Yeah, this is all billable time.
Exactly.
All this time in the bunker.
Billable. That's actually why Hitler killed himself. I think that was shortly after Schmitt's bill.
He got the lawyer's bill.
Yeah, we paid for the diesel.
What is this for? Carl, you're killing me.
Yeah, every phone call, minimum 15 minutes, Bill. You know, even if it's a two-minute call.
Look, if you're a Patreon subscriber by now, you hopefully this doesn't offend you. And you need to know that when we finally decide to kill the show, the final episode is Hitler.
Hitler,
And that's it. And that's
we're
going to
hit
know.
Submit, and then I'm turning notifications off. I might just delete my Twitter account.
Just going away, just canceling ourselves. Brad's making some land, got some land in the woods.
I'll come back a year later and be like, I wonder how that episode did.
I wonder how my career looks. Oh,
weird that my credit score is really bad.
That's weird. Right. I can't access my bank. Yeah.
So Frenger and Carl Schmitt are good friends. Schmitt respected Frenger. Now Frenger was a leading writer before the whole Bosch thing in the Weimar Republic. He was a well-known person. He was sort of trying to position himself as this like medieval mystical guru guy, but he had legit art historical credentials, right? So he and Schmitt are kind of friends. And before the publication of any of this stuff, Frenger is submitting these thoughts and interpretations on Bosch to Carlos Schmitt. Carlos Schmitt.
This is why we do the After Dark, is that we can. You're already getting ahead of when they flee to Argentina.
Right, exactly. That's what he would give her a mustache, and then he would. Yeah. Yes. Carl Schmitt happened to be in prison in Nuremberg when he read the first version of the early version of this book that I was reading from, imprisoned in Nuremberg for being a jurist for the Nazis, right? And now Schmitt had a slightly different interpretation where Frenger was saying like, this is the world that we could live in after the fall if, you know, we hadn't sinned and we could return to it. That's what Bosch was thinking. Schmitt was like, he was like the Duke of Alba. He was like, this is liberalism gone too far. The central panel of the Garden of Earthly Delights.
Oh, no.
He's like, this is, you have to stamp this out. This is the enemy. You have to stamp this out in order to ever have any kind of order in the world, right? Okay. Now, this actually kind of lines up with Körner's interpretation, actually. I was talking about Joseph Leo Körner, his interpretation in the main episode we're talking about. He saw this as the enemy is the self. Schmitt sees the enemy in this painting. It's a little bit more complicated than just the enemy is the self. But Carl Schmitt's entire political philosophy was that you can define what your own politics are based on who your enemy is. That's how you define your political reality, sort of, right? It's all about who your enemy, who's your enemies, and who's your friends. And somebody who's a Schmitt scholar is going to bash that, and that's fine. Now, I'm going to go back a little bit. 1933, Ernst Jünger, who you know who that is, and I know who that is, wrote to congratulate Schmitt on a book not related to Bosch. But in their discourse, Jünger and Schmitt talked about this Garden of Earthly Delight paintings and mutually understood the central panel as being, quote, an enmity that was inscribed in the order of things. Junger said there are evil creatures and good ones, and that this battle in the painting is reality between good and evil. Junger claimed that the friend-enemy distinction in the Bosch images is strange to us because we have lost our understanding of the friend-enemy distinction and thus have lost a grip on reality itself. Okay, a little bit, just another little nugget on this. In 1942, Carl Schmitt met Mircea Eliade. I don't know if you know who that is. That name
I've got. I've got Eliade right here, and I've got Junger right here. So,
oh, dang.
Yeah, I'm
see, all this stuff ties together. All. Man. Mm-hmm. It all, everything always ties together. So, I'm familiar with. I wasn't familiar with Carl Schmitt beyond the name, but Mircea Eliade. I've read a number of things by him. He wrote a great book on anthropological book on shamanism. So he's this great Romanian historian of religion, and a man that had, you know, frankly, had fascist leanings. And Carl Schmitt meets him. They talked for many hours about Bosch and specifically about the Garden of Earthly Delights. And from these conversations, Eliade concluded that the German air raids were somehow helping the Germans to understand Bosch and rediscover their grip on reality within the Garden of Earthly Delights. Like, this is, like, he claimed, Mircea Eliade, and I think the Franger Carl Schmitt discourse suggests this as well. Mircea Eliade's basically saying, like, the Garden of Earthly Delights was, like, philosophically important to the Nazi war effort. Right, it's like a seminal text in a way.
Jeez.
Right, Junger would later at the Caucasian Front. This is because he's a World War One war hero. He's still alive during World War II. At the Caucasian Front, he confronted the horrors of a situation he'd long clamored for, which was was what he called total war, and. There's some other writings that suggest that for Junger, Bosch was the metaphysical representation of this idea he had of total war. So for folks who want to know more about that, we're going to do an Ernst Junger episode a little later. So maybe we'll get to this idea of total war and kind of reference Brad, back to this.
Du musst dein Deutsch mehr Deutsch lernen. You have to work on your German a little bit. That was garbage German, but you have to work on your pronunciations. Yeah.
Is it Junger? How do you say it?
Ernst Junger.
Ernst
Junger, something like that. I'm sure a German would correct me.
I was just going to call him Ernest Junger.
Ernst Junger. Ernst Junger.
Ernest goes to war. Right?
Just when you're thinking about it, you know, Carl Jung, right? Jung again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm Jung again.
Junger. Okay.
Yeah, Junger.
Okay. We'll work on it.
What you want to do is drink a lot of milk.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I can barely pronounce English, man. So that's
you're doing fine. You're going to do that episode's going to be great, man. I'm reading Storm of Steel right now, and this is a figure that I'd like to learn a lot more about.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, he's sort of come back into the public consciousness a little bit in some way, it seems like. So that's interesting. It's a Junger time in some way, some weird way. Mm. So that's going to be cool. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of all I had in that connection. It's not obviously Bosch wasn't a Nazi. I mean, that doesn't even make sense historically, but there is this painting. There is something about this painting that inflames intense passions. It's not just an oddity, right? You know, like I was saying in the main episode, Körner places this painting and the passionate inflamed to own it as a domino in the great bloody Reformation struggle of, you know, of the 16th century. So, you know, and then here it is being talked about at the front in World War II, you know, by these major intellectual figures. So,
yeah, it really is bum ba dum bum. It's this. If this painting went missing, you would think that it would somehow set the balance of the universe off.
Right. It would be like who has it, right?
Yeah.
Like if you were going to turn this into a comic book, it would have like some kind of superpower to turn you into like a supervillain. Mm-hmm. And if you had it would like warp your mind, and you would start like, you know, going out on bombing raids or something. Yeah.
Yeah. This is so interesting. Yeah. I'm looking at looking at the Wikipedia, Bosch lived all his life in and near Hertogenbosch. Because there's an S there. So Hertogenbosch, which was located in the Duchy of Brabant. Yeah, so fast. And he came from a family of painters as
well. All painters, yeah. Now, one thing that's interesting is in St. John's Cathedral, the church that he was associated with, there was a fountain that nobody knows who made, but looks very much like the fountain in the leftmost Garden of Eden panel in the Garden of Earthly Delights. And there's some odd, there's some unusual gargoyle type figures on the St. John's Cathedral. So the thought is that it might have been his family that made that stuff.
I just think it's such a fascinating thing. And again, you did such a fine job creating a new style of episode. I wonder what my first example of that's going to be.
I mean, that was, I threw it down like, I'm going to do Bosch. And then I kind of got into it, was like, wait, nobody knows that. Like I had like a whoops.
I mean, you know, because I know I want to do Hildegard von Bingen at some point.
That would be very
cool. I mean, and I think we need to do some fun stuff, like at some point, you know, Genghis Khan. Even though it's, you know, it's not art per se, but of course,
I think we would be interesting to pick, you know, something from another part of the world that's also kind of old. Like, I'm sure there is some fascinating Chinese painter or writer,
or like a poet. Lao Tzu would be fascinating because did he even exist? It's a poet called Wang Wei.
I've heard that name.
Familiar? Oh my God, the poems are wonderful. I had a I had a hardcover book of the poetry that I Wang Wei, that was just, I just thought was just so fun.
Or somebody like Basho too, you know, that the haiku writer. Like there are these things we could hit on.
And we're gonna have to do all the cliches too. We're gonna have to do Mishima and all of the stuff that people are into now online.
Well, you know, my philosophy, I'm starting to think my philosophy on, so my goal with this Hieronymus Bosch episode, once I got into it, was like, I'm gonna try to make the best single source audio on Hieronymus Bosch. That's the plan, right? So when we do these subjects, if it's somebody that's already done to death, to me, we got to do it like, this is almost a production meeting, but it's got to be like, that's different than any other.
100%.
Right?
What is their take on Virginia Woolf? Why is that different? Right.
So if we hit somebody like, you know, like a cliche, it's going to be really, I'm going to really think about like, okay, well, how do we come at this so it's not just another sort of documentary about this person on the list? Because I think, you know, whether we pulled it off or not, the Bosch episode we just dropped, there is no one place you're going to go and get all that information. So
people are going to find us. Well, this is, so I'm looking at debates on attribution. The exact number of Bosch's surviving works has been a subject of considerable debate. Yeah. His signature can be seen on only 7 of his surviving paintings.
Yeah.
And there is uncertainty whether all the paintings once ascribed to him were actually from his hand. It is known that from the early 16th century onwards, numerous copies and variations of his paintings began to circulate. In addition, his style was highly influential and was widely imitated by his followers. Over the years, scholars have attributed to him fewer and fewer of the works once thought to be his. This is partly a result of technological advances such as infrared reflectography, which enables researchers to examine a painting's underdrawing. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
There was confusion about there was a bunch of works by Peter Bruegel the Elder that they used to think were Bosch's, and they've now determined they're not.
Well, and you know what film is obviously influenced by Bosch a lot is In Bruges.
See, I've never even seen In Bruges.
What? What? You've got to watch In Bruges.
I do.
You do.
Yeah, I watch it.
Oh my God, I hate to be that guy, but that movie
I've heard nothing but praise for it.
In Bruges is a must-watch movie, and especially after doing, especially so to speak, And especially after doing the Bosch episode with all the butts, you've got to watch In Bruges because you'll really appreciate it.
Okay.
Now, it uses a lot of the Bosch symbolism, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, really?
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
What is this other Bosch painting with the big mouth wide open? Which one is that?
I think that's The Last Judgment. I believe.
Oh, yeah. Which you did three times.
yeah, that's the surviving Last Judgment. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so there's a bunch of Last Judgments that didn't that have like one panel or another. Mm. But don't have the full thing, but there is one Last Judgment that has that mouth thing, the Travis Scott Astro World mouth on it.
Yeah, right. Which of course they did open a portal into hell.
They did. Yeah.
Ooh. Well, Brad, congratulations. I really enjoyed listening to this. It's a lot of fun, man. We've got Blauergeist and Jaws coming up. We've got
Godward Godward's coming on to talk Kafka.
When are we doing that? Soon?
I think it's on the calendar.
Yeah, we just had a baby, so
yeah, we can move it around.
No. I'm just saying I have baby brain.
I've got it on the 29th.
Oh yeah, so we've got just this week we're gonna have Godward come on, and then and then we're gonna have the Jaws watch party on Friday, and then it's gonna be getting up to our toe time with Adam Lehrer, so that should be a lot of fun. I'm gathering my our toe books.
Yeah, I think, and then also Philip K. Dick is shortly after that.
Did we say, I don't want to turn this into a production meeting, but did we say our toe on the 15th? I think we did.
That's what I've got. Yep.
All right, cool.
Agreed to it yet, but yes. Yeah,
dynamite. Okay, let's confirm that. Well, and listen, if you're listening on Patreon, we really appreciate it. We want to hear from you. If you have a subject that you think that would be great for us, you know, we're happy to hear from you. We're booked out months ahead of time here now.
Yeah. It takes a long, and this is not a complaint because I love doing it. It takes a lot of time to put one of these episodes together. And I've had people kind of contact me and be like, hey, can I come out and talk about this guy? I'm like, you know what? Like, that's 20 hours of prep to do
We're looking at late this year into 2023. And, but if there's somebody you're dying to talk about, you know, we do want to hear about it. And likewise, if you hear an episode where you're like, ooh, I really would love to come on and talk about that. We do the Dark Room episodes and, we like hearing from people. So it's totally fine. Yeah. And, you know, do you have anything else you're dying to say about Mr. Bosch?
I don't. You know, for folks who may want to get a little more familiar, look at the Twitter. I'm going to start dropping some of the. I don't like to drop too many of my sources before the episode, but I'm going to start dropping some of the sources, the lectures, and things that I used to put this together. So those might be interesting. And take a look at the paintings. I mean, crack open Garden of Earthly Delights and just kind of zoom in and roam around on it for a while. We, in terms of interpreting the symbols, we just scratched the surface. I mean, we talked about a half a dozen, maybe 10 or 15 tops specific items on there. And that painting is a zoo. It really is.
It's a carnival.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So there's
it's
a
not
lot
just
to
the
see.
Individual things, it's the connections between the things,
right.
And the eye line and all this original.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting. And so you can get kind of lost in it, and it's worth it. And his other paintings are great too. I really recommend taking a look at the Hay Wayne triptych as well. So that's it. That's all I got.
All right, Brad Kelly. Thank you so much, man. I really enjoyed
that.
Man,
and that was a lot of fun.
All right. We'll see you on the Godward episode soon.
Yep, absolutely.
Peace.
Yep, peace. Be good.